The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 4, text number 38, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on August 19th, 2007, in Austin, Texas, USA.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we would like to welcome you to this program of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Today we are reading from the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita as it is, text number 38.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Nahi Jnanena Sadrisham Pavitram Iha Vidyate Tatsvayam Yogasam Siddha Kalenatmani Vindati.
In this world, there is nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Such knowledge is the mature fruit of all mysticism. And one who has become accomplished in the practice of devotional service enjoys this knowledge within himself in due course of time.
Purport.
When we speak of transcendental knowledge, we do so in terms of spiritual understanding. As such, there is nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Ignorance is the cause of our bondage, and knowledge is the cause of our liberation. This knowledge is the mature fruit of devotional service, and when one is situated in transcendental knowledge, he need not search for peace elsewhere, for he enjoys peace within himself. In other words, this knowledge and peace culminate in Krishna consciousness. That is the last word in the Bhagavad Gita.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Parakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha.
So, everyone is looking for that taste which is very sublime. Some people look in one way, and other people look in other ways to find that taste which is very, very sublime. Everyone is hankering for that sublime taste. But here Krishna is giving us very, very valuable information. He is enlightening us in the fact that there is nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Not only does he inform us of this fact, but he also enlightens us with transcendental knowledge. If we are willing to take the mood of Sri Arjuna, if we remain as a mental speculator, well, I think this, I think that, Krishna has his opinion, I have my opinion, then we cannot enter into the realm of transcendental knowledge. But if we will understand, just as Arjuna understood, that I am a conditioned soul, I am subject to four defects. My senses are imperfect, and therefore I have a tendency to be illusioned. And because I have a tendency to be illusioned, then what happens? I make mistakes. And in spite of making so many mistakes, I think, don't you know how great I am? I am so great person. So that is cheating business. Instead of honestly admitting my mistake-prone tendencies, I want to gloss them over by a slick PR campaign. You see? That's called cheating. So, since I am subject to these four kinds of defects, if I remain stubborn in this position, I will never realize transcendental knowledge. But if I will take hint from Sri Arjuna, Karpanya Dosho Pahata Svabhava, which Tametvang Dharma Samudacheta, Yat Shreyan Syan Nishchitang Bruhitan Me, Shishyastehang Shadimang Tvang Prapanam. That now I am confused about my duty. I have lost all composure due to miserly weakness. In this condition, O Krishna, I am asking you to tell me clearly what is best for me. Now I am your disciple and a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. If we will humble ourselves before Lord Krishna, just as Arjuna did, then we will be in a fortunate position that Krishna then can bless us with transcendental knowledge. We can understand who am I. We can understand what is the material nature, what is the spiritual nature, who controls both the natures, what is my relationship with that controller of the natures, how can I perfect that relationship. We are meant to live in a state of harmony. But now we are suffering, we are being dragged through a state of disharmony, individually and collectively. We are being dragged through a very, very disharmonious situation. They call it the status quo. It's not a very bright status quo at the present moment in the human civilization. But if we will take hint from the words of Bhagavan, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, it is affirmed by Arjuna, Parang Brahma, that Krishna is the Absolute Truth. If we will take the version of the Supreme Absolute Truth, Personality of Godhead, very seriously, allow those words to enter into the innermost core of our hearts, deeply, 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 deeply taking these words of the Lord into our hearts. then we will become enlightened, we will become illuminated with transcendental knowledge. And we will see things exactly as they are. We will know, where have I come from? What is my actual identity? What is my relationship with this temporary body and this temporary material world? And what is my actual eternal position in the spiritual world in relationship with the Supreme, all-attractive personality of Godhead? This is called self-realization. One will realize all of these things if they are willing to hear very seriously the words of God, Krishna. You see? Krishna explains that this knowledge is the mature fruit of all mysticism. There are so many mystic yogis. Of course, nowadays you don't see them very much. In the Himalayas, there's a few here and there. But formerly, the mystic yoga system, the Ashtanga system, was a very popular system in the ancient times, the Satya Yuga. That one would follow the rigid rules and regulations, the yam, niyam, the do's and the don'ts. One would sit rigidly in asana, sitting posture, performing pranayama. You see? And in this way, gradually go through the eightfold rungs of the Ashtanga system and come to the mature fruit of that mystical process, samadhi. But in this age, such practice is not very practical. Who can set aside 60,000 years for performing Ashtanga yoga, and we don't even live for 60 years in many cases? But to speak of 60,000 years it required to perfect that system. Is it? So, Krishna has made it easy that if we can simply become enlightened in this knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita, you see, and that means applying it also, of course, simply by becoming enlightened in this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, that in itself will bring us to the mature fruit of all mysticism. We will be absorbed in a state of samadhi, trance. This is described in the fifth chapter. Na prahrishyat priyam prapya, nod vijat prapya chapriyam, stirabudir asangmudo, brahmavid brahmanistitaha, bhayas prasheshvasaktatma, Vindat yatmani chatmani yatsukam. Vindat yatmani yatsukam. So Brahma yoga yuktatma sukam akshayam ashnute. That such a person does not rejoice upon attaining something pleasant, nor does he lament upon obtaining something unpleasant. He is self-intelligent, he is unbewildered, he is fixed in the science of God, and therefore he is already situated in transcendence. Such a person is not attracted by any type of material sense enjoyment, but is in a state of trance, enjoying the pleasure within. In this way, the self-realized person enjoys unlimited happiness. Why? Because he concentrates on the Supreme. So this is the mature fruit of all mysticism, to enter into that state known as samadhi. The samadhi of the bhaktas is more solid than the samadhi of the yogis. We see that the one yogi, he attained the samadhi stage of the Ashtanga system. But Indradev, the king of the heavenly planets, he became very disturbed that this yogi is becoming so powerful that if he wants to, he can use his mystic powers to take over my position as the king of heaven. So I better do something to stop him right now before he does that. So he dispatched a heavenly society girl named Menaka. And as soon as she came in the presence of the yogi, immediately he gave up his yoga practice to have a love affair with this beautiful heavenly damsel. And his yoga was finished. Of course, in the bhakti yoga system, it is more powerful system. Therefore, one can have husband, one can have wife, and have family, and still remain in the samadhi of Krishna bhakti. But in the other system, Ashtanga system, there is no question of having any relationship like that. One has to give up the yoga practice to enter into such relationship. So, Krishna continues to explain, one who has become accomplished in the practice of devotional service enjoys this knowledge within himself in due course of time. So now he's giving the technology or the technique by which one can actually taste this nectar that he's describing. One has to become accomplished in the practice of devotional service. Of course, there are different stages. There is the neophyte stage of devotional service, and everyone has to go through that. But here he's talking about one who is accomplished in this practice. This means that we have to progress from the neophyte stage to the stage of becoming very expert in the practice of devotional service. Because that's how we will enter into this state of tasting this sublime, pure as pure nectarian samadhi state described in this verse. So the entire world, they are actually hankering for this peace of mind. But they do not know how to find it. The politicians are promising them, you just give me your vote and I will bring peace to your country. I will bring peace to your life. Just give me your vote. You see. This is cheating, actually. The politician, he does not have peace in his own heart. So how he can bring peace to the citizens? How is that possible? He himself doesn't have peace. Not possible. Therefore, such politicians who are leading the world at the present time, they are simply one big pack of cheaters. That's so there is a very burning need in the modern day society that we have actual qualified leaders, those who know the science of God. This is the great need. The great Indian emperor, first in those days, India meant the whole planet Earth. Did you know that before the reign of Maharaj Parikshit, for 3,888,000 years, the kings of India ruled this entire planet? Do you know them? 3,888,000 years. Yeah. That is the history. If you study in the Vedas, you will see. For 3,888,000 years. That is the sum total of the years of the Satya Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, Treta Yuga, and Dwapara Yuga. The Satya Yuga, who knows? That is 1,728,000 years. Who knows the, and what is the duration in the Bhakti Shastris here? Certified Bhakti Shastris. And the duration of the Treta Yuga, 1,296,000 years. And the duration of the Dwapara Yuga, 864,000 years, you see. And how many years are we into the Kali Yuga? Approximately 5,000. Of course, the reign of the Indian kings ended when the Kali Yuga began. It was up to the end of the Dwapara Yuga. So, formerly, there were qualified leaders on this planet. It was not democratic vote, but they were better than democratically elected leaders. If the dogs, hogs, camels, and asses vote for a leader, who will they vote for? A big dog, hog, camel, ass, that's all. So, in the former times, the actual heads of the society were the brahmanas, the spiritual masters. They were pure devotees of the Lord, who studied the Vedic wisdom, who practiced the Vedic wisdom, and trained everyone in the practice of the Vedic wisdom. Especially the kings, they were disciples of these saintly teachers. And they, in a humble mood of servitude to their guru, they would rule the kingdom, that's all. They never thought it was their kingdom. And they always thought, this belongs to God, it belongs to guru, I'm simply managing on behalf of guru, that's all. So such saintly kings, they were called Rajarshi. Raja means king and Rishi means saint. So they were Raja and Rishi combined becomes Rajarshi or saintly king. So formerly we had saintly kings. For 3,888,000 years we had saintly kings ruling this whole planet. It is only now in the last 5,000 years of Kali Yuga that has become a dungeon of the demons, actually, to put it mildly. But the good news is that things can be reversed. We can bring back the Vedic age if we ourselves will understand what are these teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, if we will apply them in our lives very nicely, and if we will spread it to others. Just as a cancer, once it gets a foothold in your body, it takes over your whole body, you see. So, this is a transcendental cancer, Krishna consciousness movement, you see. If there are some pure devotees on this planet who are purely practicing Krishna bhakti, who are not compromising with the material energy at all, and heavy-duty bhaktas, you see. If we have even a small number of heavy-duty bhaktas who are strictly following the acharyas, the mahajano yena gata sapanta, and that will be like a cancer in the social body and it will spread. You see? A benign cancer. So, this we want, you see. We want such a class of men and women who are fixed in Vedic knowledge, who can act as leaders, global leaders on this planet, in their families, in their communities, in their state, in their nation, internationally, on all levels, all strata of the society, educational, government, social, educational, arts, in every dimension of the society, there are so many leaders in so many categories, military even. We want that there should be Krishna conscious men and women who are taking the leadership positions throughout the entire world, you see. This will bring an end to the anomalies of this age, at least for 10,000 years. This will bring an end to the anomalies of the age. If you don't know what that means, it means irregularities, you see. This will put a stop to the anomalies of the age. If we can have Krishna-conscious men and women who bring their senses under control by engaging them 24 hours a day in the service of Krishna, Vacha Vegam, Kuroda Vegam, in this way. All the Vegams engaged in the service of Krishna. Such persons who control their senses, they are qualified to make disciples all over the world. So we need such a acharya class of men and women who can train people how to become pure devotees of Krishna by their example and by their words. This will bring about a revolution on this planet. This will bring about a complete reversal of the downward trend that we are seeing manifest year by year by year on this planet. This will bring complete reversal. Just like the the material cancer will go into remission. You see? So kindly, you take up Krishna consciousness. This is our humble request to each and every one of you today. You kindly take up Krishna consciousness very, very seriously. Make your life perfect by understanding properly and fully implementing the instructions of Bhagavad Gita. It may take you some time because it is quite different from how you have been trained in the material world, either in Christian society or Hindu society even. Pure Krishna bhakti is quite different. So it may take you some time to gradually adopt all the understandings and applications of this great science. But, what do they say? A 1,000-mile journey begins with the first step. So at least you must make that first step. You see, that yes, I want to be a devotee of Krishna. You see, make that determination in your heart. And then beg Lord Krishna to guide you. Now I've made the first step, now you guide me, what is my next step? You see? In this way, you make that determination to give your life to Krishna and achieve the supreme perfection of existence. So I can ask now if there are any questions. Krishna consciousness and what?
Japa.
How do you conquer over the distractions when you're chanting your japa? Well, the first tip is rise early in the morning before sunrise when the mind is more peaceful by nature. If you begin your rounds after sunup when the mode of passion becomes predominant, passion means go here, go there, do this, do that. That's the mode of passion. Sattva-guna time is the meditative time of the day before the sunrise. There's nothing to do. There's nowhere to go. It's just the only where to go is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. So the first thing is chant as many rounds as possible before the sun comes up, and then that will get you locked into the mode of transcendence. And then even if you go beyond the sunrise, you'll be fixed in the right mood. See, because at nighttime and sleeping, it is all tamagun. The mind just goes here and there. So you have to rise early, take your bath, and chant the holy name. Sing Gurvastakam prayers to get the mercy of Guru and Krishna. And then chant Hare Krishna mantra. And you can. There are other ways. You can beg Krishna. He's been waiting for millions of lifetimes when this soul will finally start chanting my name. So do you think he won't help you if you ask him for help? You just say, Krishna, I want to focus on your name. My mind is distracted. Please bless me that I can focus now on your holy names. If you pray that way with all sincerity, like a child begging the parents for help, you see, then Krishna will help you. Next question. There's no need for water. No water. The questions have ended. The well has run dry. The water has run out, and the questions have run out. There's no need for more water. I'm leaving in a minute. There's no questions. I'm going away. Go back to do my work upstairs. Yeah.
What is meant by condition? What is meant by condition? We are conditioned. So
oh, conditioned. Yes. Conditioning means one becomes psychologically, and actually they have a term, they call it brainwashed. You see, They can take you and manipulate you psychologically to, you know, you can be indoctrinated, you see. The totalitarian governments indoctrinate the citizens, for example. They condition them to hate the enemy of the totalitarian government. So, we are conditioned by the material nature to think I'm this body. We are conditioned to think that I am the center of the universe, that everything actually revolves around me. My enjoyment is the number one consideration within the universe. We have been conditioned to these false understandings. Krishna consciousness is not a process of conditioning. It is a process of deconditioning, to free oneself from all the false conceptions that have been programmed in one's brain by the material society. Next question. Yeah.
Can you name the four defects that we're all subject to?
What about them?
Four defects we are subject to.
What are they? Yes. And the first one is your senses are imperfect. Just like you're in your apartment and you hear some explosion, some bang, loud sound. Because your senses are imperfect, you do not know whether that was a car was backfiring or somebody shot a gun. You don't know for sure because your senses are imperfect. And because your senses are imperfect, therefore you have a tendency to be illusions. You can take something to be other than what it actually is and vice versa. And so that's the tendency to be illusion, the second defect. The third defect is because of this you make so many mistakes. Even Mahatma Gandhi probably gives example. He was advised, don't go to that prayer meeting, there will be danger. But he went anyway and he was shot. So we have a tendency to make mistakes because of these two prior defects. And then in spite of all of these defects, we are very proudly thinking that we know everything. We advertise ourselves as great learned PhDs, Nobel laureates, etc., etc. So this is called cheating propensity. So these are the four defects. Tendency to be illusion, imperfect senses, tendency to be illusion, making mistakes and cheating. Four defects. Question.
Yeah. Okay, our question is, who is real God?
Who is real God?
Yes. Who is the real God? Many people have different opinions about this. But we can understand philosophically, God means the original source from which everything is coming. Some people want to deny. They say there is no God. See? But that is not a very intelligent philosophy. But because we see that everywhere, that we don't see anywhere, I mean to say, that something is coming from nothing. We see that everywhere a thing is coming from something else, and that thing came from something else. So if you go back to that original place from which everything is coming, that is God. So since personalities are emanating from that source, therefore that source must necessarily possess personality, and therefore God is a person, a supreme person. See? Now who is that supreme person? That is your question. How do we understand who is that supreme person? There is a great Muni, maybe you have heard the name Parashara Muni. In Vedic history, there is a great Muni, Parashara Muni. And he is given a test by which we can determine who is that Supreme Person. He said that Supreme Person is that one who possesses so much power, beauty, renunciation, knowledge, wealth, and fame, that no one can equal him or excel him. That is the Supreme Person. So if we study throughout all the personalities of history, and we see who is the most powerful, who is the most attractive, the most beautiful person, who is the most renounced person, who is the most knowledgeable, who is the most wealthy, who is the most famous, then we see that Sri Krishna actually is in that position. In fact, Krishna declares, Sarva Loka Maheshwaram, I own everything. He says, everything emanates from me and therefore I own it. It's all mine. So who else has even made that claim in the history of the world? Everything emanates from me, therefore I own it all. And who can back up that claim? Some people, some madmen may imitate Krishna and say that. One Pandraka, he did that. But he didn't last very long. When, you know that Pandraka? Yeah. He claimed that he was Vishnu. He put on, like an actor on the stage, he put on little props with two extra arms. And he didn't last very long. He challenged Krishna in a battle. He said, I'm the supreme, not you. Let's fight it out and see. He lost the battle. He lost the duel. So if you study very carefully all the Vedic wisdom, you will see that Krishna is the supreme. And that's confirmed in the Rig Veda also. You know that shloka? Om tad Vishnu paramang padam sada pashyanti sarayo deviya chakshanatatam. All the various devas, the gods and goddesses. In India, there are so many gods and goddesses. But they all look to Vishnu as the supreme. They all see Vishnu as supreme. That is stated in Rig Veda. So that Vishnu, he is the supreme. And Vishnu actually is a category. It is called Vishnu Tattva. There are many personalities in that category described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. But it's described in the Bhagavatam Shloka, Krishnashtu Bhagavan Soyam. Of all of these Vishnu forms, Krishna is the original Vishnu form. So, that Supreme God, that is, you can say, Narayan, Vishnu, Ram, Narsingha, Krishna. They are all in that position. But of all of the Vishnu Tattva category, Krishna is the original. So, Svayam Bhagavan, that is Krishna. So the answer is Krishna. But it is not, we don't take it on some blind faith because this is Krishna religion, therefore Krishna is the supreme. No. This is not a religious cult. We are scientists, we are Vedic scientists who have studied the Vedic wisdom, who have analyzed everything from the standpoint of logic, philosophy, and shastric evidence. And we have reached the conclusion that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore we are following His instructions. Now, since we are philosophers, if you can show us someone else is the Supreme, we'll switch. But no one's been able to do that yet. It's an open challenge. If you can show us that someone else is supreme other than Krishna, we will switch. We are not blind followers here. We are philosophers. But no one's ever shown. I've been making this challenge for 36 years and no one has ever been able to pull it off yet. Yeah.
What is Om?
What is Om? Om. Krishna says, I am Om, actually. Om is a sound representation form of Sri Krishna. So in the Vedic, there's a famous Vedic saying, Om Tat Sat. That Om is Krishna. Actually, the impersonalists, they make big hay out of the second mantra, Tat, which refers to the Chand Yoga Upanishad mantra. You know that mantra? Chapter 6, 7, 8 in the Chand Yoga Upanishad. Tat Tvam Asmi. The impersonalists make a big hay out of the second mantra. Thou art that. They say that means you are God. Well, that is not the actual meaning. It means you are the same quality of God. That's all. That refers to the previous Tattvam Asmi in Om Tat Sat. It refers back to Om, which is Krishna. So really, Tattvam Asmi means you are of the same quality as Krishna. That's what it means. Om Tat Sat. Tattvam Asmi. You are of the same quality as Krishna. So what is the quality? What are the qualities of Krishna? He is eternal, he is full of knowledge, and he is full of bliss. So that is also your qualities. So it's very important to know, Krishna directly states in the Bhagavad Gita, I am Om. So you should know that Om is Krishna. One young Indian gentleman, he came to our temple in Montreal many years ago, and he met Prabhupada. He said, Prabhupada, I like to chant Om. And Prabhupada said, well, at least you then should chant Om Krishna. Of course, he didn't chant Om Krishna very long. He became a disciple of Prabhupada. And now his name is Gopal Krishna Maharaj. He didn't chant Om Krishna very long. He switched over to Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. Because that is more potent than Om. Om is more or less an impersonal way of addressing. Oh, my Lord, Om. You see? Like saying, hey, you. Hey, you. If someone addresses, hey, you. Are you attractive? But if someone says, Kirtan. Is it? His name is Kirtan. Kirtan. Then that's immediately it. But if someone says, hey, you. So Om is more impersonal. Hey, you. Hey, you, the Supreme. Hey. So you're addressing God, but it's more or less impersonal, you see. But if you want to actually fully attract the attention of God, then you chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, any other questions? Yes.
This is actually her question again. She asked me yesterday, like, what is love? And when we love Krishna, do you kiss Krishna? So, what is the difference between love and kiss?
What was the second word?
Kiss. Love kiss. And kiss.
Kiss? Uh-huh. Yes. Yes.
What is the difference between love and kiss?
Yes. Sometimes they say, when they sign the letter to their lover, they say, love and kisses, isn't it? So what is the difference between love and kisses? Of course, kissing, kissing is an expression of love, you see. But there are many ways of expressing love. Not just kissing, you see. Actually, if you really love someone, you will serve them. You see, that is the real thing. Love means service. Many people kiss, but they just do it for sense enjoyment. They don't really love the object of their kissing. Their kissing is for some sense enjoyment, you see. But actual love means service. If you really love someone, you will serve them. So, to love Krishna means to serve Krishna. And service means whatever Krishna wants, I'm prepared to do them. So if you really love someone, you will obey them. Whatever they want you to do, you will do. That is love. That is real love. So that's the difference between love and kisses. Kisses may be for my own sense pleasure also, you see. But love, that is simply service.
It's really hard to explain them when asking these kind of questions. I was at the Walmart and she started asking this question. I said, okay, hold on. Let me see, how can I answer you this question?
Yeah. Yes, kissing may be for sense enjoyment, but love means service. Yeah.
I have a question.
Yes.
In India, many people worship so many different forms, and they say all is one. Could you explain that?
Yeah, they worship many, many all is one, but within oneness, there is a oneness, but there is variety also within that oneness. As I quoted a few minutes ago from the Rig Veda, the demigods, they see Vishnu or Krishna as the supreme. So people who say it's all one, they're not following the Vedic injunctions. There is distinction made in the Vedic wisdom between the Supreme God and the subordinate gods and the living entities in general. That clear distinction is made. In the Vedas, we learn there are many, many, many demigods, millions of them actually. Now someone propagated the false idea that all those demigods are the supreme, that all the gods are the supreme. But I ask you this, is that logical? If I said there are many federal courts in the United States and they are all the Supreme Court, is that possible? There are many, many federal courts and they are all the Supreme Court. No, not possible. Supreme means one without a second. You cannot have many supremes. It's logically impossible. Supreme means there's no equal, no one equal to that thing or that person. That is supreme. One without a second. So to say that all the gods are the supreme is madness. It's actually a roundabout way of declaring atheism, because if there's no supreme God, there is no God, actually, because God really means supreme God. So there has to be one God who stands out as the supreme. And then you have actual theism, you see. And this is confirmed by all the demigods themselves. They look to Vishnu or Krishna as the supreme. Om tad Vishnu paramam param sada pajanti sriyo deviya chakshadasaram. Brahma sees Vishnu or Krishna as the supreme. Shiva sees as the supreme. They all see as the supreme. They don't think they are the supreme. So we should follow the great acharyas of India who clearly delineated that Vishnu or Krishna is the supreme and all the other gods and goddesses are subordinate servants. And if you analyze where they live, it will be very obvious the difference, because the demigods live in the material world. They don't live in the spiritual world. They are the various controlling deities of this material existence. For one who does not see beyond the material existence, they may think all the gods are the same. But one who sees beyond the material existence with the light of shastric vision or scriptural vision, they can understand that in that transcendental abode, there is the Supreme Vishnu on every planet, and on the topmost planet, there is Krishna. So to say that everything is one is true in qualitative sense, but not in the quantitative sense. God is eternal, we are eternal. God is full of bliss, we are full of bliss. God is full of knowledge, we are full of knowledge. So qualitatively, everything is one with God. But quantitatively, eko bahunam yo vidadati kamam. He is the one who is supplying us. We are not the suppliers of everything to everyone. God is doing that. We are not doing it. If someone wants to claim that they are God, I say, all right, then pay my mortgage. Prove it. Make my mortgage payment every month. Make my car payments, then I can understand that you're God. And not only for me, but do it for everybody on the whole planet. And see, because God actually feeds everyone. He's supplier of everything to everyone. Can you do that? You see, if you want to claim that everyone is the supreme, then show that the pauper in the street, he's funding the U.S. government. You cannot do. Any more questions?
Yeah.
Yes.
In the stage of Kali Yuga, there seems to be so much information, it becomes very overwhelming.
What kind of information?
Just the different bhakti yogas, and, you know, when you speak of that, it took 68,000 years, you know, to attain certain...
Oh, the Vedic science is a little overwhelming?
Yes. And how can you, when this, if you're a fallen soul in this condition, you know, a condition, how can you, it just gets very overwhelming. Is there a way to...
Well, it's very simple. Just like, very nice question. Thank you very much. Just like... somebody wants to become a master of mathematics, and you come at the first day of your freshman year, you know, and some professor wants to wow and zow you with all this advanced stuff to show you what a great field you're entering. You see, you go, wow, you're sitting there going, oh my God, how can I ever learn all this stuff? But if you actually attend the classes day by day, do the assignments, write the papers, do your duty as a student, then gradually, you will become an expert professor of the science. So you have to understand, Rome wasn't built in a day. You have to be patient. If you're impatient, you say, now I want to understand all of it right now. Well, I'm sorry, you're not going to get it. You have to be patient. Prabhupada gives the example of a woman who gets married. She demands a baby the next morning after a wedding. Isn't that possible? Takes time. So you have to be patient. You have to do your duty, just like Prabhupada gives the example. If the wife faithfully does her duty as a wife, then in due course of time, certainly the child will be there that she wants. So you want to have that Vedic knowledge. You have to do your duty. You have to follow the instructions of the spiritual master. Follow the instructions given in the Vedic wisdom and be patient. You see, I'm speaking after having strict, you know, followed this process 24 hours a day for 36 years. And every day I'm getting newer realization. But you can't expect to know what I know. As a beginner, you have to pay your dues, as they say. You have to study, you have to apply the knowledge, and gradually, everything will be revealed to you. Is that all right? Any other question?
I want to do two things. One which is my duty.
You want to do your duty.
Yeah. And one person who is suffering. I want to help a person who is suffering.
And you want to help only one person?
Yeah, the other person. One person is suffering. I want to help.
Yes.
Help that person.
Yes.
And one more thing I should do is my duty. I mean, which one should I help?
Should you do your duty or should you help the suffering person? Well, if you really want to know the truth, your duty is to help all the suffering people. Why only one? That is your duty. Your duty is actually to become a pure devotee of Krishna and therefore do the highest welfare work for all living entities. That is stated by Lord Chaitanya. You were born in India? It's a special instruction of people born in India by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Bharata Bhumi Te Manusha. That's a nice verse. He says that anyone who is born in India, it is their duty to make their life perfect by becoming fixed in Krishna consciousness and then dedicate their whole life for relieving everyone from their suffering. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given you your duty. You become perfect in Krishna consciousness and then do the highest welfare work of freeing the entire planet from its suffering condition. So now you have your duty. Now do that. Are you ready to do them? We will train you how to do them. You have any of our books? Someone show him Bhagavad Gita as it is tonight and ask him to leave a... We will show you Bhagavad Gita and ask you to give something, donation for the printing cost. So you can take this book and you can study so you can know what is your actual duty for becoming perfect and personally perfect and giving the highest blessing to the entire planet. So here the book has already been pulled off the shelf. Now you simply have to give something, reciprocation, for the cover the printing cost. Usually like $10 or $15 that people give. Can you do this after the class? Yeah. So the book is here. You can take this book now and then give something to Abhaycharan for the cover the printing cost. Yeah. Abhaycharan is my disciple standing here behind you. See? You know him? See, turn and see who he is.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, you can give him some contribution for the printing cost. You study this book very carefully, and then you will know what is your duty and how you can relieve the suffering of the entire planet. Anything else?
When shloka is there, akashat patitam toyam yatha gacchati sagaram.
Sarva Deva Namaskara Keshavam Prati. Yeah. What is the translation?
All. She is saying that if you worship all the Devas, then you can attain Keshava. Gacchati. Keshavam Gacchati.
The rainwater comes from Akashat Patitam, means from the sky.
Mm-hmm.
Water goes anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
On the earth.
Yes.
It, just like it goes Gacchati Sagaram.
All the rivers goes to the ocean.
Like that, all the Sarva Deva Namaskaram means
All worshipping all the demigods, right? Sarva Deva Namaskaram.
Sarva Deva Namaskaram Keshavam Prati Gacchati means goes into Keshava.
That
is the supreme power, Keshava is.
Where is that verse given? Who is given that shloka? What is the source of that verse?
I studied in 8th standard.
Is that from the Vedic wisdom or some poet made that up? Because the authoritative instruction of Keshava himself is Kamaistaistar Hitagyana Prapajante Nyadevata Tam Tam Nimamashtaya Prakritam Niyatapsvaya. That those who worship the demigods, they have lost their intelligence. That's what Krishna states in the Bhagavad Gita. So Keshava himself is advising against worshipping the gods and goddesses. He is saying, you just worship me. It's true that for persons who are on material level, they do worship the demigod. But Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, you give up all of those duties and just surrender to me. Sarva dharman padit jaja mame kong shiranang raja ahang tvang sarva papebhyo mokshiyashami mashuchaha. He says, you give up all of those duties of worshipping this god, that god, this god. You give up all those duties, worship me alone. Because if you try to worship all the gods, do you know how many gods there are? 33 million. There is a god that controls everything. Even when you go to the toilet room, there is a god that controls the passing of stool also. There are so many gods. If you try to worship all of those gods, every time you want to go to the toilet room, you offer puja to the rectum god, you see. So you have a proper bowel movement, you see. We'll go crazy trying to do all these pujas to all these different gods. You don't have time in the day to offer pujas to 33 million gods. It's not practical. So simply chant Hare Krishna mantra, worship Krishna, and because Krishna is the root of the entire creation, therefore, just as when you water the root, all the leaves and branches are nourished, when you give your love to Krishna, then automatically you give the best service to all the gods and goddesses, and they're very pleased with you, you see. So you want to please all the gods and goddesses, then you worship Krishna. Otherwise, if you try to worship this god, that god, you can leave some of them out. They're going to get angry at you. They'll curse you.
No, the meaning is that... God, one person praise this God. Another
he's saying you worship anybody and worship will go
that
to
goes to
Krishna.
Goes to Krishna.
Keshava.
That is the meaning of the sloka.
I see. According to Vedic rules, when you worship that God, you're supposed to also worship Vishnu. That is the Vedic injunction. Just like my disciple Abhaycharan told me, his family used to worship Shiva, huh? But you would chant Vishnu mantra first, isn't it? What is it?
All the demigods.
All the demigods. That is Vedic standard, that you, when you worship the demigod, you must offer oblations to Vishnu. You see? So, why worship the demigods? They are not the actual providers of the blessings that they give you. You know them? That is all coming from Krishna. So why you should worship a middleman? Why not go straight to the source? Just like here in America, there's one businessman. He thought, why should I buy my goods from distributors? I will buy directly from the manufacturers. That is called Sam Walton. You've heard of Walmart? You see. They followed this principle of going directly to the manufacturer to get their goods. And they became very successful by that formula. You see. So, why you should go to the middleman? Go to Indra for the rain. Go to Sarasvati for the knowledge, you see. Go to this goddess or that goddess. Why not go directly to the source? Because then you will get everything much better supplied, much more profusely supplied. You simply go to Krishna and you get everything. Why do you want to distract yourself with worshipping this god, that god, so many gods? This is not a very intelligent program. You go straight to the source and get the full blessings. Yeah.
Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, what she says is that all the worship goes. That is true. All the worship goes to Krishna, but it's indirect worship and it's avidipurvaka.
That's right. There's a sloka. Krishna says, there's a sloka. I don't know that verse, but doing it in the wrong way. That's right. It does ultimately go to Krishna, but that's the wrong way to do it. You're not worshiping properly that way. It's the wrong method. It's indirectly going to Krishna, but it's going the wrong way. You're coming in the back door and you're not really getting the proper, you know, you're coming to Krishna's backside. We want to see the smiling face.
And when we do something, avidipurvaka means what?
Bad reactions also. Is it? So why mess around with so many bad reactions? Just directly approach Krishna, then everything becomes all auspicious. Is it? Then all the gods will bless you and help you on your path of Krishna bhakti. All the gods will be assisting you in your Krishna bhakti. Why go beggaring, flattering, you know, this god for that, this god for them? In India, you see, there's a system. When you want to do something with the government, what do? You bribe the government official, you see. Isn't it? This department, bribe. That department, bribe. Bribe, 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 bribe. You see. And it's a very cumbersome system. But in America, you just give your money to the IRS. And you don't have to bribe any government official, you see. They know they have to take care of you. You're a tax-paying citizen. So our system, the Krishna Bhakti system, is the system in the USA. You just give your taxes to Krishna, and everyone's happy with you. But the demigod system is like Indian bribe system. Flatter this god, flatter that god, flatter, 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 flatter. There's no end to how many bribes you have to give to get your work done, you see. That's a very cumbersome and complicated process. And still, even after all the bribes, it still takes forever to get even the slightest thing done, you see. So why not just come to Krishna consciousness? Make your life simple and easy. She needs to study Bhagavad Gita as it is. That's right. in her native tongue. Hindi? Hindi Bala? Hindi Bala? Huh? Huh? Marathi Bala. Oh, okay. Do we have Marathi Bhagavad Gita? And we need to get, she needs to read Marathi Bhagavad Gita. All right then, so anything else? Okay, we'll stop here. Raja Vidra Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thank you very much.